Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Juiciest Bits. I'm Mandy Elliott, soon to be joined by my terrific co-host, Charlie Barber. And today we are talking about All the President's Men, 1976 film made by Alan J. Pakula, one of the newish, new Hollywood genres of the political film, and starring Dustin Hoffman, Robert Redford, Jack Warden, Jason Robards, just a whole bunch of folks. And we're learning about some history too, some American history with the Watergate scandal. This is largely known as a classic, and we look forward to sharing our burgeoning knowledge and hijinks with you as we talk about this episode. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of The Juiciest Bits when we talk about All the President's Men.
Hello, I'm Charlie.
I'm Mandy.
And this is
The Juiciest Bits podcast.
Yeah.
We did it.
And today we are talking about a movie that really made me feel like an idiot. I felt like such a dumb dummy. Did it also make you feel like an idiot?
Well, no.
Because you're smarter than me. It's fine.
No, that's not why. It's because I grew up learning American history and not Canadian history.
Okay. All right. So the movie we talked about was All the President's Men.
Yes.
A movie made in the 70s about the Watergate scandal and the Nixon administration and like all the sort of like pre-stuff to the fallout. So there were a lot of names that I didn't know, a lot of things that were casually referenced, but this was really a choice. So I'm saying that, like, this is probably my three women, in that this was, it might be a little bit harder to talk about because it's mostly just men talking for 2 hours.
Yes, yeah.
Rather than three women sort of staring off into the distance. But it is my birthday tomorrow, and I have felt like a deep primal hunger to see Robert Redford, particularly 1970s Robert Redford.
Yes.
So I had given you an ultimatum. 3 Days of the Condor or All the President's Men. And you made the correct choice. Like, talking about 3 Days of the Condor would have been not great because it's a little silly and doesn't hold up super well.
Right, yeah.
But also, this movie felt like work. So, what was your experience watching it? Have you seen it before?
I had not seen it before.
Okay.
But I enjoyed it. I love a good Robert Redford movie. Mm-hmm. And I am curious about the history of Watergate. I mean, I didn't know everything about it, but it seemed really interesting. And I'm a sucker for a good, you know, journalists getting to the bottom of things movie. Yeah, and there were certain parts about it that I find interesting, even though it was a lot of white men just sitting around talking to each other, which is something I typically avoid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it had all the elements of being something that, like, sounded like a whole lot of nope.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, just a lot of white men. And, like, the whitest white men, at, like, a terrifyingly, like, you know, like, not that we're not, like, past racism in any way by now, but, you know, also quite a white supremacist time.
Mm.
And then also just, like, talking about other white men. So it's, like, white men on white men forever, all the way down.
Yeah.
Nothing but white men. yeah. So, this was also my first time watching this movie, and I really appreciated the hair, really appreciated the tight pants.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, like, understood very little. So I actually watched this twice because I watched it once on the weekend, and I'll, like, talk about it a little bit later, too, but, like, I had to, like, stop it so often to look up shit.
Fine.
So it was so disjointed an experience for me that I got to the end and I was like, okay, Nixon resigned. I don't actually know what happened because it was so chaotic. Like, should I know this person? How important will it be later on? I was just, like, constantly doing the Google.
Yeah, I think one thing I would say about this movie is that it assumes that the viewer knows all the information.
Presupposes so much.
Because if you don't, if you go into it having never heard of Watergate, you would probably be very lost. Because they just, yeah, casually drop names without kind of prefacing or exposition.
Hugely. Yeah. And I was wondering if this is because, like, this whole thing is recent memory when this movie comes out. Like, yeah.
4 years before.
Even less than, because, okay, well, yeah, so for the beginning. But, like, the book that this is based on came out a few months before Nixon resigned in 94, or 1974. Mm. And then I guess Robert Redford was like, I gotta make a movie of this now. So then the movie came out less than 2 years after that.
Yeah.
So I feel like if this movie were made now, there would be so much more context provided. And, like, things to sort of, like, ground and situate the viewer, where at the time everyone was like, oh, this is just, like, known. Mm-hmm. This is common knowledge. We know that, like, this name is also, like, you know, chief of staff. Yeah. We don't have to say chief of staff so-and-so all the time. We just have to, like, use his name. Whereas I was like, they keep, what? How is this dude important? I guess he's really important, but I don't know how, like, where this, like, hierarchy is.
Yeah.
And hierarchy is so important in this movie because it's like them following the chain all the way up.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, this could be just like a bottom rung player. This could be like, I don't know, like not the president because that's Nixon, but like literally anyone else up the rungs. Which was frustrating and didn't let me enjoy all the beautiful butts.
There are many beautiful butts. Yeah.
So I had to watch it a second time in order to just absorb the film as itself, and then also the appreciate the viewing.
Yeah.
Makes sense. May I do a summary?
Please do a summary.
All right. So again, this will be very difficult because, once again, I didn't understand most of it, and a lot of this was flying by the seat of my pants. So, a typewriter tells us that it is June the 1st, 1972. God is in heaven, President Nixon is in the White House, and a group of randos are clumsily trying to break into a dark office building. A security guard notices Hanky Panky and radios some plainclothes cops, including, guess who? Did you recognize him?
Yeah.
In one of his first roles ever.
Yeah.
Say who it is.
F. Murray Abraham.
F. Murray Abraham in a bucket hat. Oh.
A charming bucket hat.
He wears it with gravitas and dignity, as he should. So and he has barely any line. Like, he has, like, two scenes, and they're, like, tiny.
Yeah.
So he's literally, like, the most extra.
It's a very bit part.
It's wild to be like, oh, wow. Now global superstar, F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it's true.
Bucket-hatted cops show up, catch the burglars red-handed, and arrest them. Next morning, at the Washington Post press room, everyone is talking about last night, and we get some more deets on what we just saw. Turns out the burglars broke into the National Democratic headquarters in the Watergate building, and they had listening devices with them and were also carrying a lot of cashola in sequential $100 bills. So they probably weren't burglars after all, because who carries money to a crime scene? And $100 bills at that. So instead, they might be something weirder and sneakier, like spies. Perky blonde journalist Bob Woodward, Robert Redford, goes off to the courthouse only to discover that the burglar spies aren't using state representation. They already have a fancy bunch of lawyers who somehow knew they were in trouble without being called. At which point, old Bob's nose starts twitching because he smells fishy business. Okay, then, can you remind me how Bob found out about the notebooks? I can't remember that part, having even watched this movie twice.
Oh, I don't remember either.
Oh, there's so many, like, little details that are sort of, like, connecting bits.
Yeah, it's like somebody mentions them, and he goes and tracks them down.
Okay, good enough.
Yeah.
So anyway, he finds about, like, notebooks that had been found on the burglar spies, and in one of the notebooks, this random name pops out, Howard Hunt. And that name, Howard Hunt, is sort of the thread that he starts pulling, our Bob, until the whole sweater unravels. From here, it's basically a painstaking step-by-step investigative process with Bob and also sultry brunette journalist Carl Bernstein, played by Dusty Hoffs, as they use one tiny detail to find another tiny detail to find another tiny detail until cumulatively... Oh no, that one beer I had really hitting.
It's their birthday. Give them a pass.
I'm having a nice time.
Yeah, yeah.
Cumulatively.
Very good.
They uncover a massive conspiracy. And so this is what I found so intense, like, as we talked about watching this movie. They don't explain anyone in context.
No.
Aside from when one of the editors mansplains who Charles Coulson is to Bob Woodward early on in the movie. But I was raised a good evangelical Pentecostal, so I already knew about Charles Coulson. Because evangelical Christians have raging conversion boners about Chuck Coulson. They love his story so much, and so literally, like, the most I brought to this movie in prior knowledge is that good old CC had a very convenient conversion experience while in jail, and then went from being one of the most powerful men in America politically to being one of the most powerful men in America spiritually, which is to say, still politically, lol. Spicy Zing. Take. We gotta credit the bastard for an incredibly savvy rebrand.
It's like, true.
It must be said.
It was a good pivot.
It was an incredible pivot.
Yeah.
So anywho, Bob learns from this experience to never again ask about titles. And he even says at one point, I don't know titles, which seems tricky if you're a political journalist in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, you should probably know titles.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
But who am I to poke holes in a Pulitzer Prize winner's technique? So, you know, whatever. Which meant that I had to stop the movie and Google names every 5 seconds. Yeah. So I had to do all the work that Bob didn't. Where's my Pulitzer? Case in point, the search to find Howard Hunt leads Carl and Bob, or Woodstein, which is their literal couple name that is used throughout the movie.
Yeah.
I loved it. To discover that Hunt was doing research on Senator Ted Kennedy and Chappaquiddick, and everyone is like, yes, makes sense, this is like a major deal, but then no one says why, so I was like, searching Chappaquiddick, and why do we care about Ted? And
ooh,
did you know about
Chappaquiddick?
Yeah, that's the one.
I did.
Well, I was homeschooled also, so... it's my excuse. Moving on. So this is all happening, but Carl and Bob are starting to get weird resistance to what seem like super normal inquiries. Carl calls the White House library and asks for a list of books on Kennedy that Hunt was reading, and the librarian is first like, oh yeah, I've got like the whole list right here, let me just grab it. And then she comes back and is like, oh no, I don't have that list, also the list never existed, also I don't know a Hunt. And then Carl goes to Bob and is like, you'll never believe what happened to me just now. And like a good boyfriend reporter, Bob calls the White House communication desk and is like, care to comment on this weird convo my boyfriend just had with your librarian? And the dude is like, our librarian doesn't talk to your boyfriend. What are you talking about? So, all to say, our boys try to find more evidence but keep getting stalled out. And when they want to write a story about it, it mostly boils down to a librarian said a man might have read a book.
Airtight.
Again, like, I'm no Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, but it doesn't sound like a story. It sounds more like the beginning of, like, a shitty observational comedy bit. And managing editor of the Post agrees, Big Daddy, Ben Bradley,
mm-hmm.
played by Big Daddy Jason Robards.
Yeah. Mr. Lauren Bacall.
Ooh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Is like, yeah, there's nothing here yet. Go out and get some real facts. So off Bob toddles to a dark car park where he has a meetup with, surprise, surprise, a mysterious figure that we come to know as Deep Throat, who also refuses to tell Bob anything of value. DT just stands there and then forces Bob to recap the last 45 minutes of the movie before saying, follow the money, and then yeeting out of there. Bob and Carl do follow the money and find out that one of the Watergate burglar spies somehow had deposited a check that originally came from some random dude who donated to the committee to reelect the president, or creep, as everyone calls it, which should be a red flag.
Yeah,
honestly.
Yeah.
Like, that's the smoking gun.
Mm-hmm.
The committee calls itself creep. Come on, come on.
It's a
up to no
acronym.
Good.
Yeah. Do better.
Do better. yes. Next thing, our boys find out that Creep actually has a giant slush fund of unaccounted for money, and it's used without any paper trail whatsoever by a few political bigwigs. The only problem is, everyone is like so scared about talking about it, and everything's so hush-hush. Carl is only able to get, like, last name initials for some of the bigwigs, which doesn't seem useful, again, but our boys make the most of it. Then Carl and Bob hang out in Carl's beautiful apartment for a bit, and I suddenly understood why Nora Ephron fell in love with Carl, the scamp, even though he broke her heart. For which I will never forgive him.
Never.
How dare you treat her dirty? She deserves the world. Moving on. While doing more research, our boys find evidence that campaign sabotage was going on way before the Watergate break-in. Bob takes this to his weekly chat with Deep Throat, and, like, at this point, I don't even know why they have these chats at all. DT is no help, and then adds insult to injury by saying, I don't like newspapers. Bro, yeah. What? Why are you even here then?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
Did you understand why Deep Throat was, like, involved at this point? It seems bonkers. Crazy banana pants.
Yeah, I mean, it just really seems like he just kind of wants someone to figure it out.
Without him actually having to do anything.
Without him having to do anything, which leads to the confrontation at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, but he's, like, up until now, like, is sort of, like, the most non-presence. Like, he's just, yeah. Like... Yeah, you tell me what you know, and I'll just sort of, like, passively, like, rubber stamp it, I guess.
Yeah, he's mysterious.
Ugh. Oh, man. Toxic boyfriend traits. Then Bob keeps pushing, and DT is like, yeah, this is a major conspiracy, and the FBI and Justice already know about it. So now everyone's on edge because this is starting to feel like big, steaming shit, even though they really don't know any details. Like, that's the other thing, is that, like, this movie is sort of dancing around all of this, like, kind of shady shit, but it's only towards the very end that they even start to get an idea of what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob and Carl now have a list of the five bigwigs who control the committee's slush fund of, like, illegal campaign money. But since one of the names is literally White House Chief of Staff, second most powerful man in the United States, Big Daddy Bradley is like, you need one more source on the record before we print this. Which honestly just seems like a movie excuse for Bob and Carl to run around the press room in their tight pants for a bit.
Any excuse is a good excuse.
Oh my god. And I was grateful to it for that.
Sure.
But eventually Carl gets his source, kind of. Again, it's a bit sketchy, but they get there and they go to press. And then the White House gets very angry. Washington Post's name is Mud, and Bob and Carl are ready to fall on their swords, but then they realize it's just more cover-up bullshit. And Deep Throat tells Bob that literally everyone is involved in this conspiracy. So, like, Justice, FBI, CIA, like, everyone who's anyone. And that Bob and Carl have, like, just scratched the surface of it all, and that they're probably being watched, and that their places are probably bugged, and that their lives are in danger. Which, again, okay. DT has been stringing poor Bob along for so long, and then to suddenly dump the mother load on them, like, all at once?
Yeah, and by the way, your life is in danger.
What a dramatic
he should have
bitch!
Known,
yeah, come on!
Still, yeah. Yeah.
I just, like, have no time for Deep Throat.
What a waste of a nickname.
Oh, no. Yeah. So then Carl and Bob take this info to Big Daddy Bradley, who looks great in a red housecoat, by the way.
That's true.
So good. And Bradley's like, well, go have a quick 15-minute nap and then get back to work because the fate of the nation rests on your two typewriters. Sufficiently motivated, our boys go back to their desks and we see them plunking away as the TV shows Nixon getting sworn in for his second term in office. And then, almost as an afterthought, one of those, like, printing press, like, rapid, like, typesetter things. What is it called? Do you know what that's called?
A typewriter?
No, but it's not a typewriter. Don't fucking patronize me. How dare you?
I honestly thought it was a typewriter.
No, it's not a typewriter. No, it's like the it's like a wire. Yeah.
I don't know what it's called.
Okay, all right. How dare you?
I thought it was a typewriter.
So anyway, one of those things scrolls through a series of news bulletins depicting the fallout of all the top White House guys confessing to various crimes, ending with Nixon's resignation in 1974. That's it.
Yeah.
We're done.
Nice work.
Oh,
nice summary.
Man. So, I don't know where you want to talk about, but let's maybe talk about the ending first, or maybe the pacing of this movie.
Yeah.
Did you find the pacing of this movie really weird, and the ending in particular?
Yeah. So, because the pacing, I mean, this movie is, what, 2 hours and 18 minutes or something like
it's
that?
It's super fucking long.
And
And it, you it's, go, yeah.
Yeah, it, there are lulls for sure. But it, I don't know, I wasn't really bored watching it, but it does seem like there's a lot of lead up to everything happening at the end. And then they don't show everything.
They don't show the most important part.
Yeah, which I find really interesting because it's a movie about journalism, really. And so it is kind of fitting that we would get the rest of the story in print.
Mm-hmm. Right, because those are the moments that are out of their hands.
Yeah, and those are also the moments that, I mean, if you grew up learning about Watergate, like, you would know that Nixon wasn't going to resign, then Nixon did resign, and then, you know, it's just kind of like there's no need for all of that extra stuff, although it would have been really satisfying, I think, to see them actually succeed. Like, you don't see them...
We don't get any kind of resolution.
No, like, they just...
They're just plunking at their desks. And then there's that sort of, like, the writing on the screen, and
like,
that's it.
We assume they submit their story, and, I mean, historically they do, but yeah, it's very, for all of
it's
the
so
lead up,
it's
so anticlimactic, but I kind of like it.
Can I say why?
I think for the reasons I said, like, I think I just, for all of their work, like, their whole job throughout the movie is to get all of this in print. And then finally we see it come through in print, and it's like they won, right? And that's almost more sustaining than
seeing them jump up
excitement
in,
like,
a press
high
room.
Five or something. Like, what are they gonna do?
Walk off, hands in each other's butt pockets.
Yeah, because we also don't really know, like, we don't know anything about their personal lives, really. No. Like, they both are...
They're not even really pals, it seems like.
No, they don't know each other at first, and they both have really messy apartments, and that's... And then Robert Redford wows us by telling us he's a Republican.
I mean, it was disappointing, but I was expecting it, so...
I mean, it meant something slightly different then, but... Not really.
Well, but in the context of Nixon,
But I mean, that's the extent of it. Like, we don't know. Like, the movie doesn't take us through their personal lives, so we don't really. If we saw them celebrating, it would be maybe weird to see them out of the context of work.
Right. Yeah, because this movie sort of posits them as, like they are sort of like news junkies, like they can't, like, they don't seem to exist outside of it. They're working at all hours. They're like, they never turn it off. Like, their apart, even their living spaces are just, like, packed with their work.
Yeah, just cluttered with papers
and, like, layers upon, like, they both look like hoarders.
Yeah, and they're green at this, right? Like, they're both fairly new. They have something to prove, and they don't even. Like, I like the portmanteau of their names, but it also means they don't have their own names even.
They don't
at
have
work.
Their own identity.
It's just Woodstein the whole time. And and so, like, they're just identified. If somebody says Woodstein, one of them will come running, and the editor doesn't care which. So there's that sort of, you kind of get the sense that it's the grind to prove themselves, and the proof comes to fruition at the end with everything in print.
I felt like the pacing, I mean, at the end, I was sort of like, what? That's it? Like, having sort of, like, been through the 2 hours and 20 minutes of screen time, where it feels like you're kind of lulled into this, like, there's so much detail, and it's so, like, you know, like, packed full of all of this stuff that, like, it feels impossible to sort of, like, even keep track of how things are connected as they're going by. So even with all of that, I was sort of lulled into this, like, I don't know, almost like passive viewership after a while.
Yeah, totally.
So that by the end, when it suddenly ends, I was like, wait, what?
Now I have to read?
No, but it just
was
very, like,
abrupt.
I had come to expect something different, and then all of the sort of familiar movie beats of, like, you know, after struggle comes triumph, like, you know, those narrative structures. it didn't follow that. And I was, and I felt disoriented from that as well.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I kind of love that too, because they're not, I mean, I think it would be really easy to valorize them and make them into heroes,
mm-hmm.
when really they're just like, they
working got, schlubs.
They're working schlubs. They got lucky on a tip. They put the work in.
And they made what seems like a lot of very bonkers guesses that turned out to be right.
Yeah, like they got very lucky.
Many times.
But at the end of the day, they're just doing their jobs.
Yeah.
Right? Same as all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hooray for you. You broke a big story. That's great, but it's also your job.
Mm-hmm.
And it broke other stories. Like, it's sort of a snowball.
Yeah.
The end. Where they're less involved in that because they did the
yeah, no, thing. They had their one piece. Although I've seen a lot of, like, blurbs for this movie and for the book being like, these are the journalists that took down Nixon. And it's
yeah.
like, oh, okay.
But it doesn't, the movie doesn't read like that.
No, it doesn't. They're just sort of like very small pieces in this massive. And the thing is, we end the movie also not having even a clear sense of how big this is. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like, oh, we've been gathering, like I said before, like we're gathering these tiny details that don't seem related. And it's just like these drips and drabs of tiny little moments that are like, okay, maybe connected, maybe not. But you're trying to weave this story out of something. I kept thinking of like that story of like the bunch of people in a dark room, each touching an elephant. Because it felt like that, yeah. that was like Bob and Carl making a story out of, you know, what seemed like just like, oh yeah, this one political guy also liked to read books on Kennedy. Like,
yeah.
you know, and that's like, no, that's, how is that a story? But then they make something of it by like, yeah, extrapolating wildly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm not sure where I was going with that, but it feels like, yeah, they've got these tiny little details that you expect to build into something. But the end comes and you're not even still sure what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, it continues the story without them,
mm-hmm.
as life does.
Yeah.
And I think it's, I agree. I think that all the hype would suggest that we have this real hero's journey where
mm-hmm.
the two end in triumph and return heroic. But really,
get the dames.
Yeah, but they just disappear, and there are the dames that are in the movie are not romantic interests at all, and like it's just very.
They literally disappear. They sort of like fade into the background.
Disappear. Yeah, like they're just.
Which is so weird because, like, the preceding scene, their managing editor, Big Daddy Ben Bradley,
mm-hmm.
Has literally just said, like, essentially, the fate of America rests on your shoulders.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, they're in this, like, scene where they are the least important part of it. And then they just, we get nothing else from them.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's interesting, too, that Ben Bradley says this while he's at home sleeping and he comes down in his house coat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, even we see even Ben Bradley's life outside of work, right? Or, like, he has a really nice house and a really nice coat. And...
I want that house coat it's so nice. Bad.
But yeah.
Yeah, like, we see him like not in the context of work.
Yeah. And yet like, yeah, telling them, go home, get some rest for 15 minutes and then go back just to work.
How
which is just
fucking
like,
insulting.
Yeah. No. Impossible. And he's kind of like berating them while also telling them like, you did it. Good job.
Yeah.
But yeah, then it's just... Like, I had to watch that scene a couple of times to be like, are they in trouble again? Or did they do something good?
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell because it's just so, like, Bradley is such a grump all the time. But also,
well.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that we see more of his home life than we see.
And now that's barely anything, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's more of a person outside of work. Than Woodward or Weinstein,
mm-hmm.
so.
Yeah, which, again, is interesting to think of in terms of sort of this larger genre of journalist movies, mm-hmm. where I feel like so often the journalists are the heroes.
Yeah. I mean, look at something like Spotlight.
I was just thinking of Spotlight, yeah. Where it's like, yeah, these people are here to, like, take down the powers that be, and they're the ones, you know, running down halls and, like...
Yeah, saving the children.
Saving the children. Like, yeah. And it's never... It's like, yeah, they're, like, on a mission rather than, like, putting in a day's work.
Yeah. Yeah, and this almost, like, All the President's Men seems... almost more reluctant, maybe, because, I mean, while Spotlight is really eager to take down the Catholic Church for reasons, I think the idea of taking down, realizing that you're taking down the government is...
Especially if you already, like, you voted for them.
Yeah! Well, and the fact, I mean, they had so little to go on because they were... It was the government.
Everything is covering itself. Everything is denying it.
And also just realizing how vulnerable you are.
Yeah.
Once you realize, like, oh, I'm against the government. They can see me. They can do whatever they want. I cannot hide.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think, yeah, the stakes are maybe different in All the President's Men, but it also seems a lot more, hesitant or. Oh, I can't think of the right word.
It's very close. It's
braver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also thought it was interesting the choice to not, like, depict any of the key players as actors.
Yeah.
Like, all of the people that they're talking about are either heard on the phone or they're seen in, like, real-life footage on a TV that's playing somewhere in the press room.
Yeah, the use of found footage is very interesting.
Very interesting. And so all we see are these people, like, essentially journalists.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only people we ever see. Like, we spend a lot of time in the press room.
Yeah. And the women who work for...
And the women! The powerful men. Oh my god, we gotta talk about that. But I was just gonna say that it feels like a very closed-off system, weirdly. Mm-hmm. So that, like, these people, for all their, like, investigation and sort of, like, reaching out, so often felt to me like they're in a, like, this little bubble.
Yeah.
And I think one of the only moments that sort of was undercut is when they're Bob and Carl go to the Library of Congress and they're paging through the library slips, and we suddenly get this, like, zooming up shot of, like, that middle circle area.
Yeah.
And suddenly, like, these two people that are, like, our main characters that we've been following and sort of, like, are the center of this movie world suddenly become these tiny little specks in this giant structure.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was the one point in the movie where I felt like they were actually just, like, tiny pieces of something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Because so often we're just, like, really close on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it felt like yeah, I know, like, yeah, they are in danger, they're dealing with a lot of stuff, but it also kind of doesn't feel like it. It feels like they're, like, protected.
Yeah. Well, and it's
by their own insularity.
Like, you would think, I mean, they're investigating people pretty high up in the government pretty soon. And you would think they would be at least somewhat nervous about that, but they're not at all. Like, it's like it doesn't even occur to them. Like, oh, maybe the FBI's involved. Interesting. Like, not, oh, no, they know where I live, and they know where I work, and they know my mother's maiden name, and they know, like, yeah, they're very...
naive.
They're very naive and very cool about it, and also... like, the Post itself is pretty cool about it. Like, they don't seem...
they're so casual about being, like, yeah, in the White House's bad books.
Well, and it's almost as if everybody kind of is telling themselves that it's nothing. Right? Like, this is why Woodward and Bernstein are assigned in the first place.
Yeah, they're like, oh, it's just a break-in, whatever.
Yeah,
whatever.
Don't worry, well, let's put our greenest guys on it.
Well, and it's also kind of confirmed by, like, how all the initial stories from Bob and Carl are just, like, essentially nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that, like, yeah, librarian says that, you know, man read a book. Where it's just like, yeah, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, go do busy work elsewhere. Like, we're not going to print this garbage.
Yeah, well, and it's a really good exercise in evidence versus speculation too. Yeah. Like, it's like, this is something I tell my students all the time. Like, you can't just let your imagination run wild without evidence from the text.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was interesting to me to see them sort of have to be clap back all the time for being like, look, we have this and this means something. And their boss is like, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
You might think it means something, but there's no evidence to suggest it does. And you need evidence, especially when you're accusing the government of doing a thing.
I was like, I wouldn't write an undergrad paper this way.
No.
Let alone, yeah, like something that's going to be printed that's about my, like, government.
Yeah.
But maybe things were different back in the 70s. I don't know. But even, like, the weird games they play, like, sort of, like, the number association game to find out the initials.
Yeah.
Of the dudes, where, like, they're just, like, oh, they're, like, we got a P, we got an L, we got an M. Like, it could be this one, it could be this one.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, like, tossing, like, matching,
yeah,
basically. And then running with it as if it's fact.
Yeah, asking for confirmation later.
And asking for confirmation later.
Yeah.
But there are these, like, throwaway lines where it's, like, Carl's like, P could be Porter. I think it is Porter. And then, like, Bob is like, it could be Porter. Like, you know, like, they're just, yeah. And then the number thing that Carl does later on.
Yeah.
Where he's like, if this is right, I'm going to count to 10 and you should hang up if it's wrong. It's like such a convoluted game, first of all.
Yeah. Well, they're learning how to get people who don't want to talk to talk by not talking.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very convoluted way of getting information that kind of makes everyone the most comfortable they can be.
Yeah. Like, trying to operate within the bounds of legality.
Mm-hmm.
And still talk about something. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, notably, all of the people they interview are scared.
Yeah.
Like, they are afraid to talk. And
very vulnerable.
And very vulnerable.
Here's the women pit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even the librarian, right? When she's on the phone saying, yep, no problem, 1 minute. And the next minute, she's like, no, I've never heard of Mr. Hunt. Like, and they're like, someone got to her. In the span of, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, if everyone is scared and you're not scared,
what's the problem?
What
here?
Are you missing?
Yeah.
Like, clearly they're afraid of the powerful men they work for. Why, if they didn't do anything wrong?
Well, and also the dynamic of being a woman in this system, a woman in the 70s, working in government, working as secretary to some bigwig or other, whatever. Yeah. And then having these other dudes show up at your place at night and ask you to spill the beans on your bosses, like, just, like, talk about being caught between two very hostile source, like forces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the bookkeeper, the one they seem to spend the most time with, when they first come to her place, her sister lets them in and is like, yeah, sure, she'd love to talk to you. And she's like, no, I would not.
And then the sister is like, would you like coffee?
Yeah. It's like,
what are you doing?
Even in their personal space, they can't, they don't have refuge because people think they should talk to the press.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like it's your responsibility, but it's also their responsibility to, you know, maintain their livelihood and stay alive and out of jail and all of these things, because it's the government, it's the FBI, it's the CIA. They can, you know, I would be afraid too of crossing anybody who could have that level of documentation on me.
Oh my god. Yeah. And like, I mean, it is not too far a leap to be like, you say the wrong thing, you cross the wrong people, you are in very, very, very deep shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, that is not an exaggeration by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
So, yeah, I just kept thinking, like, these women opening the door and to these men who are, like, trying to get into their space, who are trying to coerce them into communicating with them.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie wants us to be on Bob and Carl's side because they're the ones that are, like, you know, being sad about how often they're getting refused. And there's even a moment when they, like, think they're going to, they're finally getting somewhere. And they go to that, like, it's an accountant at a, like, a department store.
Mm-hmm.
And they just have the wrong. But, like, when she invites them in, they just, like, you just see, like, oh, they're perking up. You know, the light bulb goes on again. And you're like, oh, wow. They've been, like, really effectively, like, bedraggled at this point. But, so the movie is like, oh, yeah, look at these poor guys finally getting a break.
Mm-hmm.
When all I could think of was just, like, my God.
Yeah.
Leave these poor women alone.
Well, and that's the thing. They know. They're doing it on purpose,
you're going
right?
to the most vulnerable people.
Yeah, and at one point, I think Carl is like, I had to drink so much coffee before she would tell me anything.
He said he was there for 6 hours.
Yeah, which is like, okay.
Bonkers.
She asked him to leave. She said she was done a few times, and he stayed. And I get the need to be persistent as a journalist.
Sure.
But what's the balance
between
being persistent and being actually a figure of fear?
Like holding your source hostage, basically.
Yeah, because she was clearly uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And very worried that someone would know he was there. But also, there's a strange man in your apartment. Like, and you're alone. And
you only have his word say so that he is from, like, the Washington Post.
Yeah. Like, you can't do a Google. Like.
Nope.
Yeah, I think they are unaware / the film is not concerned with how intimidating they are.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Because there must be a reason all of their witnesses are women, except for the one dude who is only a witness because his wife told him he could be involved.
His pregnant wife,
Meredith Baxter, told him he just can't be involved in anything illegal, because that's not the household they want.
Mm.
And so I don't think he would have said anything if not for that. So really his wife is behind that too. So it's women speaking out.
Yeah.
Or gesturing. Or yeah.
Yeah.
And yet they're sort of being treated as though they must speak out on
like the burden of responsibility.
Yeah,
is placed on
someone
that.
Else's terms.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who see everything, because at work they're largely invisible.
Mm-hmm. My God, I just realized that, like, essentially Bob and Carl owe everything to, like, all the women in this movie.
Yeah.
Because they also got that break that I didn't understand from Sally, the other reporter.
Yeah!
Who's like, oh yeah, I just happen to have, like, this one dude over at my apartment. And he told me that he wrote this document. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, this is where it is at. I didn't understand what was going on, but I just, you know, let go and let God, because I was like, I can't possibly Google this. I am exhausted. My fingers are bleeding.
Yeah, they use her, essentially.
Yeah.
She had just broken up with this guy.
Oh, this is a different one.
Oh.
But yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The one for the list.
Yeah, for
and
the list.
And there's two journalists.
Yes, that's right. There
two
are
lady
two.
Journalists.
Yeah. And they are both used to the nines.
Like emotionally and sexually.
Yeah. Like this one that I was thinking of, just broken up with somebody. Mm-hmm. She still liked him, had a good relationship with him, and essentially had to, like, pretend to get him back.
In order to get information out of him.
Yeah. So she had to use her feminine wiles, but at the same time, she had to pretty much disclose a lot of her private life.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes out that he doesn't want any of that to get out because he's married with...
Well, this is the different one.
This is the different one, yeah. So the other guy doesn't want anything to get out because he's married with a kid, which we understand is maybe the first time she's heard that. So all of these two women journalists, all of their sort of sex lives are...
Like their extracurriculars are brought to bear. Yeah,
totally. Just to do a favor for these two guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's really... Yeah, they owe everything.
Which maybe is the reason why we don't see Bob and Carl's lives outside of work, is because, like, they've already done this before. Like, they've sort of mined everything they can from their own personal lives for work.
Hmm.
And, I mean, this is just a guess, but, like, the fact that they don't have anyone of their own to draw on.
Yeah.
And are now sort of, like, using other people to exploit their personal lives.
Probably why their homes are so messy. They've, like, literally rifled through
yeah.
all the parts of their lives.
Like they've burrowed through yeah. something.
Just upending everything, trying to find answers.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. I did love the sort of layers of textual detail, though. Mm. I mean, we talked a bit about the like, original footage that keeps popping up. But I also wondered if, like, the shots of the pages and the notes and the doodles and the annotations, yeah. if those were original? I wasn't
those
sure.
Were cool. I'm not sure either.
Yeah.
But I would imagine. Because
they were shot separately, too, right?
Yeah.
We would get a shot of, like, Robert Redford at the desk or whatever. And then it would be, like, these separate shots with a hand on a paper drawing a thing. Or, or like, you know, sort of like manipulating a document or something.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised that they would get that sort of detail in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it also kind of shows the restlessness of journalists, mm-hmm. right? Like, I have to doodle. I have to always... Mm-hmm.
Always be writing.
Be writing.
I did also love, like, the shot of Bob wading through, like, a library of yellow pages.
Yeah.
To find one phone number.
Yeah, wow.
It's like, the days of what another time.
Yeah, totally.
Like, and I'm... just, like, how the internet in general has sort of flattened this.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, everything that happens in this very long movie would essentially happen online now.
Yeah, like no going to a weird parkade to
no one's running
road.
Around yeah
wouldn't you're take not... a cab there. You'd probably take an Uber if anything, you know.
I mean, you might not even go there. You would just send yeah. an encrypted text.
Yeah it was really interesting watching this, seeing just how much easier some things are and how exponentially more difficult
or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Things are, like, even getting information, right?
Yeah.
As cool as it is to go down to the physical Library of Congress. Like,
oh,
there's a
paging
lot
through
of
all
stuff
of those
online.
Slips.
Like, oh, I use the Library of Congress all the time.
God.
Yeah.
Just the manual labor of it.
Yeah.
Was quite something to view. And I think I appreciated that also, just mm-hmm. seeing how physical
mm-hmm.
this is. And I think that's, like, maybe the appeal of, and, like, why sort of journalist, like, stories are so, in you know, still have that kind of weird tactility,
yeah.
even though they're now just, like, writing on, like, a laptop or something.
Yeah.
But we love to see sort of, like, an action component or a physicality
the
component
legwork.
To yeah.
yeah yeah it's inspiring. Uh-huh. I think as somebody with a research background too, it's like, wow, they're really hitting the old pavement and going for it. And
also, no one would watch a movie that's 2 hours long of someone just sitting at a computer.
No. No, that's why they don't have a movie about my life yet.
Yet.
Yeah, it's coming. But, yeah, it's... There's something so satisfying about watching somebody comb through evidence or solve a puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, it's... I mean, I could go on about National Treasure, but...
Please do.
There's just something, yeah, it's satisfying as a viewer because you feel somehow involved in the finding,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like you're part of the
team.
Feels
participatory.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I love the Library of Congress scenes, mm-hmm. And I love the bird's eye
I'm
shot.
Steal the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, maybe all the president's men too will be stealing the Declaration of Independence.
Very long-awaited sequel.
I mean, do it while they're still alive.
Why do you think journalist movies are so interesting when other writing movies aren't?
You mean like movies about novelists?
Yeah.
I think...
No one wants to see a movie about a novelist.
No. I think for me, I'm really interested in those sort of evidence-based, mm-hmm. like watching them do the work to solve a puzzle.
Yes.
And I think watching novelists, it's often, they're often movies about whiny men who just think that everyone wants to hear what they have to say. And I don't care for that at all. I don't want to hear what they have to say.
No.
I do want to hear the news.
I mean, I don't always want to hear the news. No. But yes. No. No, I agree, actually. I think that it has a similar structure to the detective.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's like the investigation. So you're, yeah, watching someone piece together something sort of step by step. And so it feels like a familiar trope with, like, enough newness. Because we do like art movies, so it feels sort of like a combination of the two almost.
Mm-hmm.
Like the investigation, the detective story, and then also like, you know, yeah, like the writer hero, the whatever.
Yeah, finding the quote unquote truth.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the mystery of writing, et cetera, et cetera.
Totally. And the sheer difficulty of writing. Mm-hmm. Well, concisely. I mean, we know that from.
I mean, I never write concisely, but all right. But they're all very few journalist movies are about writing as a craft.
Yeah.
They're never about like, oh yeah, it's hard to put words on a page.
Like, what's my lead?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Here's it's how all, to construct it's all a story. About
the footwork.
It's a data gathering.
The gumshoeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say that I've loved particularly Bob's journey to talk to Deep Throat and how it felt like you were sort of sinking down.
Yes.
The yeah. city, and you felt like there were like layers, and it really reminded me actually of the scene in Parasite where you feel like yeah. you're sinking down you and there's sort down, of like down, a down. Gravity like you're, yeah, like step down, step down, step down.
Yeah, which I found really interesting too, because I would think if you're trying to go somewhere where no one can hear you, like, sure, it's an out-of-the-way parkade, but being in the basement of an empty parkade, like...
So echoey!
Yeah, like, at least go to the top, man. Like, why the basement? Why the lowest level?
Go to a tiny room somewhere. Too gay.
It's too gay. Yeah, they wouldn't do that.
Oh, man. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about?
I think we covered pretty much everything.
I just have a lot of, like, hearts around Martin Balsam.
Yes. Yeah.
That's mostly the remainder of my notes.
Yeah. I mean...
Oh, and the one sort of thriller moment that I thought was really effective. Did you notice when they, what's his nuts? Bob leaves one of his encounters with Deep Throat, and it's just when he's sort of like starting to realize how big it all is,
mm-hmm.
and he feels like he's being followed.
Yeah,
and we just have this moment of like intense fear from him as he's sort of like briskly walking and breaking into a bit of a like trot run.
Yeah,
and it's just like a tiny scene in this span of this very long movie, but it was so effective at just capturing the sudden like claustrophobic fear
mm-hmm.
of feeling so observed and he can't tell if he is. He turns around and there's no one there.
Yeah.
But this moment, I feel like, yeah, I kept expecting more of those moments.
Mm-hmm.
And this sort of returns to what we were talking about before, but like, that one moment, I feel like, really effectively captured, you know, how reasonable a fear it is, and it sort of waved off as paranoia, but it's like contagious, and it mm-hmm. and it feels visceral.
Yeah, yeah, it's like it's finally settling in because it's toward the end too,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know, it's like, oh, finally, yeah. Someone is nervous.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I was also just looking at my notes and reminded that Bernstein, when he first meets Bob, he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, and totally.
And he says, oh, I've been in the business since I'm 16. Which is like, okay, but you're clearly in your 30s, and are you just bad at this? Or, like, why? Because they wouldn't give...
Yeah.
Like, they gave him the story because they thought it was a nothing story. So it's really interesting to me that not only are Bob and Carl on the green side, but it's like maybe they're considered somewhat incompetent as well.
Right.
And so that adds another level to that... that need to go out and do the thing, mm-hmm. only to disappear in the end, mm-hmm. because that means they've made it. They're one of,
yeah.
They're the post
finally now. Part. Yeah, they've yeah. integrated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Also, that like they've kind of like already made like, or at least Carl has sort of made a reputation for himself. Mm. Like when he goes and talks to like that one woman at the beginning. She was like, I've been warned about you.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, she's like a little bit flirty, but it's also like, oh, you like, she's like, doesn't trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that's sort of like another little moment where I was like, oh, like, yeah, you're quite young to have already burned bridges in yeah. this industry.
Well, and he is the one, I would say more than Bob, to really
push things
yeah. and overstay his welcome and sneak in to people's offices, and Bob tends to try to kill them with kindness more often, I think, and he's just very like, I think that's why in that one scene he's like, well, I'm a Republican too, and let's talk about that, because yeah. people automatically assume that because they work for the Post they're on the left,
right?
And I think this startles even Carl, who's clearly on the left,
yeah,
because he's just like, what now?
What?
We can't be friends.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Bob is just this sort of gentler guy who needs to be pushed to do.
Oh, there are multiple times where he's like sleeping and is woken up by the Post.
Yeah.
They call him and they're like,
what are you doing?
And he's like woken up.
Yeah.
One time he's late for his date with Deep Throat.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's also sort of like a They're at different paces.
Yeah.
Carl is all go, and Bob sort of is much more.
He's careful. He's hesitant, but careful. Also he...
Sleepier, maybe?
He's sleepier.
Yeah. Sleepy.
In spite of himself. Like, I think he just wants so much to be a good journalist and a good guy,
mm-hmm.
and he just...
TM.
Yeah, he wears himself out.
Aw. Well, poor sleepy. Little baby.
Yeah.
Poor little baby. Do you want to know, I have a running list of descriptions that came into my brain when I was looking at his hair.
Please tell me.
Do you want to hear some of my descriptions of Robert Redford's hair in this movie?
I do so badly.
A butterscotch wind.
Yes.
A gentle breeze through prairie grass.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wind-swept sand dunes. I'm eventually going to try and make a haiku.
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. I just, like, was mesmerized by his hair.
It's perfect.
It's so sculptural.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing to behold.
That's the thing. Like, 70s hair, it doesn't go anywhere. It stays put.
Oh, that, my God. That, yeah, no. Yeah. A good breeze is not going to move that
the
puppy.
Age of hairspray. I mean, a lot of people look to the 80s for that, but I think the 70s holds its own.
Truly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. No, I loved it so much. Such a treat. Should we move on to moments of joy?
Let's do.
Okay. What were your moments of joy?
I had a few.
I had lots.
Yeah. At one point, Carl is waiting in Miami to talk to this guy in an office, and he's sitting, and the secretary is kind of like, oh, his schedule's so full and he can't see you. And after a long time of waiting, Carl says, I'm still here. And the secretary says, I'm so glad. Just dripping with disdain, and I loved it. I also, this isn't maybe a moment of joy, but a moment of appreciation when one of the women they're talking to has just giant pit stains.
Oh.
Just like real saucers. And I was like, yeah, she's nervous. It's hot. Yeah.
Summer in DC, by all accounts, sweltering.
Yeah. She's just a normal person.
She's just like you and me.
Exactly.
Love it.
Yep.
My moments of joy, there is a lot of very funny shit. We didn't talk about how properly funny this movie is at times.
That's true, we didn't, yeah.
There's some really funny moments, and some of it's, like, the banter between Carl and Bob.
Yeah.
And some of it's Big Daddy Ben Bradley, just, like, his super dry, you know, off-the-cuff comments. Can I just read you a couple?
Yeah, of course.
At one point he's like, well, cut the word tit and print it. This is a family newspaper.
That's right.
so beautiful to me. And then also the just like how there was so much humor around phones and phone listening in and repeated phone calls. So when Bob is talking to Ken Dahlberg, the dude who had the check that mm-hmm. went awry, he first calls Ken and Ken is like sort of like escalating in intention. I don't know if this is real, so I might be a monster, but he's first like, I turn all my money over to the committee.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a proper citizen. What I do is proper. And then he's like, I've just been through a terrible ordeal. My wife's neighbor has been kidnapped. Or my neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
And then he hangs up.
Yeah. I've been through a terrible ordeal.
My neighbor's wife has been kidnapped. And Bob is like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Wild. And then he calls back like a moment later and is totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah. That was great.
And then there's another sort of like similar, like, you know, repeated phone call with the dude who went out with Sally at Sally's apartment. So they call him. And then each time, like, the dude gets like increasingly flustered, and then he ends up being like, I'm a respectable man. I've got a wife and a family and a dog and a cat.
Yeah.
And he says that to each time, to each person. So he says it to Sally. And then he eventually talks to Ben Bradley. And he's like, I've got a wife and a family and a dog and a cat. And Ben Bradley just like totally deadpan is like, yes, a wife and a family and a dog and a cat.
So like, in case the wife and family aren't enough,
like, he also has a dog and a cat.
Oh, I love
so
it.
So that was like, yeah, just, oh, the beautiful joke structure of that, like, repetition was mm-hmm. lovely to me. Mwah, mwah,
yes.
Mwah. Delicious.
Oh, and also, just the very fact that the cops who bust the Watergate scandal are wearing bucket hats.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Delightful. Like,
delightful.
Delicious.
Like, bucket hats.
I mean, iconic moments in fashion for
mm-hmm.
everyone. Also, the fact that, like, Carl is smoking all over the place, and there are these just like beautiful little moments where Bob is like brushing the cigarette ash off.
Yeah,
of the,
cleaning
the...
up after him.
Also, the just like adorable concept of, in order to find out about someone who is a peer, you go and get books out of the library about them.
I know.
Just the whole concept about like Howard Hunt reading about Ted Kennedy from the library, and I was like, that's adorable.
It is adorable.
Just like, I want to find out about Mandy. I'm going to go to the library.
Yeah. It's the only way.
It was, yeah, well, and that's like another thing. I was like, oh, of course, yeah, like pre-internet, like, where else are you going to find this information?
Yeah. And if there's no book about the person, they're just not worth knowing,
I guess. Just don't exist. Yeah. So, oh, many, many joyful moments in this otherwise very serious movie. I don't have wild Wikipedia facts because everything I could find just wanted to talk about Watergate, and I was like, I've already done so much work just like fucking piecing together this little bit.
You did great.
I'm so tired. I cannot handle more facts. No, thank you.
Gotta make room in the brain.
Gotta make room in the brain for stupid shit.
Yeah.
Do you have any movie connections?
The only one I really thought of was Spotlight. Mm. Yeah. But kind of besides that, because young Robert Redford is very worth looking at, I couldn't help it.
In what way?
I just think he's...
I'm joking.
It's the hair, you know, and the...
It's the freckles.
The freckles. Like, he's just a very... He's cute. And I'm just struck by my childhood obsession with the movie Barefoot in the Park with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda, and how he was just like this clean-cut, all-American yuppie type that I was just so intrigued by. And so it's fun to see him, you know, in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and in this where he's not quite that. Yeah, so it's not really a connection, but a
more like Robert Redford, nice to look at.
A Redford connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I mostly thought of Spotlight because that's sort of the post movie I've seen most recently. But
and
The Post.
The movie The Post.
Have you seen either of the She Said or Bombshell?
No.
Because those were other things that I was like, oh, yeah, that's on sort of my longer list of to-watches, but I haven't made it
yet.
Yeah,
it'd be interesting to look at television media and how, or television journalism and how that would be different or similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How the investigation, like, if it differs, yeah. Or structurally what it focuses on. Yeah. There's, like, a lot of journalist movies, though.
Mm-hmm.
People are obsessed with journalists.
Yeah.
They think they're the hottest shit.
I believe His Girl Friday is one of the greatest.
Greatest investigative journalist. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also seems very... This is the other thing. I feel like every time I see a journalist in a movie, they're doing, like, borderline slash... Not borderline, just fully, fully creepy shit.
Yeah.
They're just causing shenanigans. They're making shit up.
Yeah, it's true.
So really, I think the thing is, we love a scoundrel. We love a scalawag.
We do. We really do.
And journalists are that, but often in the cause for good, I guess.
Yes. Much love to our journalist friends.
Yeah, yeah. In summation, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
I learned that I am very, very glad that I don't have to write on a typewriter.
Oh, Jesus, fuck. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just the hunt and peck, like on what on earth?
How long would it take? Like, my
so
God.
So long.
Interminable.
Yes.
Yeah, thank fuck we don't have to do typewriters anymore. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I learned everything about Watergate.
Yeah, you did.
I now, yeah, am an expert on Watergate, actually. Amazing. Ask any question, I will probably know the answer. Jokes, I don't. It's very complicated still, and I don't even understand the movie. I would like to say, though, I feel like, in terms of butts, this movie, Dusty Hoffs.
It's a pretty good butt.
Might have a better butt.
Yeah.
And is it because he's shorter, so it's, like, compressed?
Well, and I think, like, Robbie Redd's like just has a really flat butt.
Yeah.
And,
he really tries to work it. There's a lot of scenes where he's sort of, like, bending over desks coyly and things.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that all their pants are just so tight.
So tight, so high.
But, yeah, Dusty Hoffs has, like, a grabbable butt.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and he's always running around perky.
Yeah,
so,
it's true.
Come on.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
I was also shocked.
I thought it would be a runaway.
I was like, this is a clear... Yeah, come on.
Yeah.
But we do have a moment where Robert Redford gets out of the shower, and he's wearing a robe, and he gets some chest hair, so
and
that's
a gold
right.
chain.
And a gold chain.
Which I do not recommend.
On a hairy chest. Yeah, it seems ouchy.
Yeah.
But he looks great.
Yeah, he does look
and
great.
And I love the hairy chest moment.
That was a nice
was
little thirst trap.
Yeah. Oh no, this is the time. The dreaded moment.
Signing off?
Nope.
That one doesn't work.
I don't like it. This is the end.
This is the butt of our show.
We have reached the butt.
We've reached the butt. Happy trails.
Happy trails. With the butt? To the butt? To no. The butt. I think that's it. I'm Charlie.
I'm Mandy.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.